And as we said before the news, the shocking results of the survey conducted by disability charity Scope, with 2,000 disabled people surveyed, suggests that actually doesn't suggest it shows that when applying for jobs, only 51% of applicants result in an interview, compared with 69% for non-disabled applicants. Now, to address this issue, we're delighted to welcome three fine folk. First of all, the head of policy and public affairs at Scope, James Taylor. How are you, James?
Good morning.
And the managing director of Virgin Media, the fabulous Jeff Dodds. How are you, Jeff?
Good morning. Yeah, good, thank you.
And we've also got Josh Dennis as well, who I think is connected and has actually experienced this from the point of view of somebody who is engaging with the disabled scenario. Josh, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Josh, can we come to you first and just share with us your own experience with respect to how this survey, I mean, the lines that effectively would-be candidates are forced to apply for 16% more jobs than someone who doesn't have a disability, how has it impacted on your own life?
It's just the knowledge that, essentially, I'm not alone. I mean, it's just a constant battle to be putting yourself out there and constantly giving yourself a chance as a disabled person to essentially put yourself at the front of the queue. It's not necessarily surprising that these figures are as they are. Certainly, it certainly gives me the knowledge that other people like me have those challenges.
Yeah. Now, one of the good things, which we always try to shed some light in the whole sort of system, is this new campaign, Work With Me. It's a 3-year initiative with Scope and Virgin Media. Jeff, again, hats off to yourself and Virgin Media and the whole sort of group for actually engaging with this side of things. I mean, your mentor for Oxford University's Ascent mentoring program. It's been a long time coming, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a very difficult area. I think one of the other parts of the research that we did showed that for non-disabled people, 2/3 of them feel awkward and uncomfortable when speaking to or working with disabled people. So this is a very tricky area that we absolutely have to do something about, and not just Virgin Media, by the way, that everybody needs to do something about.
And oft times we find that when it comes to issues relating to equality and areas in this field, legislation is in place, but you still need to kind of keep revisiting that legislation to ensure that actually there is a balance here, that we're not simply quota filling, that we are actually ensuring that people do have a level playing field to work from.
Yeah, and I think and maybe James will add to this, but you know, legislation is the kind of bottom rung of the ladder. It's the minimum criteria, and I think, you know, if we rely on legislation, we won't truly change social behaviour around this area. So we are looking to kind of lead the way in this field, and you know, with Scope, to try and get the million people, disabled people who want to work and who can work, into work.
James, head of policy and public affairs at Scope. Exciting times, but also presumably challenging ones.
I think it's really exciting times that, you know, we're launching this campaign with Virgin Media today, but you're right, it is challenging. I think you've said at the top of the programme that disabled people are applying for more jobs but getting fewer interviews, and this is a real blow to confidence. And what our research has shown, that actually 40% of disabled people don't feel confident about their chances of getting a job in the next 6 months. And what disabled people are telling us is that what Josh has said, that attitudes towards disability mean employers will be more likely to go over non-disabled candidates, and many are concerned that they'll be seen as a risky hire, which is what we really need to change.
In the studio today we have one of our ace public relations undergraduate students, Lauren Wood. Lauren, you've been listening to this.
Yes.
You've got a connection with Scope, I think, yourself. You know somebody who's worked with Scope.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this area?
I think it, you know, requires people to understand, if you're talking about changing social behaviour here, it's fundamentally people's understanding of different disabilities. And, you know, I talked to my friend about his work at Scope, and, you know, he has a belief that you should be treated equally, you know, no matter what. I think it does come down to personal experience and understanding.
Does that resonate with the sort of thoughts that you've had, James, in terms of, you know, again, what Lauren's expressed there is you know, her own perception as, you know, 20-year-old, sort of, you know, looking at the whole sort of sequence and so on?
Yeah, I think Lauren's exactly right, that we do need to challenge a lot of perceptions, and there are some quite outdated perceptions about disability and what disabled people can do. And that's what this campaign is all about challenging those attitudes and breaking down those barriers and really shining a light on the areas where change needs to happen, and change needs to happen quite quickly.
And returning to Josh, I mean, I've noticed that you clearly things like peer support, mentoring, help with coping with interviews, dealing with nerves with interviews, but these are kind of things which, you know, they should be open to all, but hopefully you would certainly ensure a part of this whole process of work with me.
Yes, very much so. I would certainly, for myself, I would peer support and support in many different ways would certainly help me to be more successful within what I would call the traditional interview setting. It can be particularly daunting for somebody who has a disability, and certainly it's very daunting for me. So any kind of extra support that's in there would be very much welcome.
And actually, returning to Jeff, this also makes good business sense as well, because surely, you know, the more inclusive and welcoming any company actually is on both sides of the whole thing, then actually the more people are likely to support it, the more people are likely to use their products, the more kind of good messages come out.
Of course, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, with 1 in 5 people in the United Kingdom being disabled, you know, we want to better reflect our customer base and the communities we serve. So, you know, reflecting that within the workforce means that you think differently. And actually talking with Josh only the other day, you know, he talks about disabled people going through the school of hard knocks and, you know, becoming resilient and tenacious and more creative in order to have to find solutions to problems. So these are the people in our organization that we want. And we want them to help us think differently so that we can build products, build services, create processes that that remove barriers.
There's literally so much we could actually spend time talking about today, but unfortunately we have to move on. So can we return to James once again and just talk about contact details? How can people who have been listening to this who actually want to find out more about the Work With Me project and so on, this 3-year initiative, what's the best place to follow up on?
Two ways. You can visit the Scope website, scope.org.uk/workwithme, or search on Twitter and Facebook for the hashtag workwithme.
Gentlemen, it's been fantastic as ever. I just want to confirm once again, it's the James Taylor, Head of Policy and Public Affairs at Scope, not the person who actually had You've Got a Friend, and actually is a good friend of our colleagues over in Los Angeles and is a singer-songwriter. It's critical, so that's always important. But James Taylor, Jeff Dodds and Josh Dennis, many thanks indeed, gentlemen. We look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future. And you would want to move on if you were actually driving between the mainland and Holy Island, because you wouldn't want to get caught in the sea. Amazing fudge made by us for you. Pilgrim's Fudge Kitchen, fudge shop, delicious fudge for the best party ever. Lauren, I can tell that your mouth is already watering. And that's just the website.
It is just the website.
I mean, and I can confirm that Tessa Snott, who was with me doing recording duties and reporting duties at this year's Burley International Horse Trials, was particularly taken by Pilgrim's Fudge Kitchen to such an extent that we felt we must get Charlotte Mundy from Pilgrim's Fudge Kitchen back with us on the programme. Charlotte, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Very well, thank you. Very well.
Excellent. It seems like only yesterday we were in the heart of Burley. The International Horse Trials was there, the Land Rover Burley Horse Trials, and we encountered you for the first time there, and I think the taste is still mouth-wateringly wonderful, and Charlotte was saying, I'm actually the sister of the fudge maker on Holy's Island, Pilgrim's Fudge. It's wonderful. And look, here we are, you know, connecting with that point of view. So, what's the weather? Are you actually on Holy Island at present? Are you on Lindisfarne?
No, the tide opens in a couple of hours, so I'll be heading on shortly. The weather's actually not as good as it was at Burley, which was a blistering heat. Here it's a little bit foggy up north, but I think the skies are trying to open.
And you've reminded us, actually, because we had to move straight to our feature on Virgin Media and Scope, that we haven't actually given the weather forecast for this outside. A highs of 18 degrees centigrade, lows of 13 degrees centigrade in Lincoln, early low cloud and patchy rain quickly clearing to give a pleasantly warm and dry day. So you see, it all gets better. It does get better. Now, looking at pilgrimsfudge.co.uk, I see in the About section, we lead by example. Is that your good self, Charlotte? I think it is, who's actually sort of featured there in the We Lead by Example.
Oh, it is!
Yeah. See there? I recognise it. Big, wonderful grin and sort of saying, yes, it's all good. You know? A family have been proudly serving fudge for over 15 years, and obviously Pilgrim's Fudge itself established in 2011, growing ever since. So when you were, I mean, Lauren here is one of our ace public relations souls, etc. But what was it about fudge that said, this is it, this is the dream job for me?
I think that helps, doesn't it? And with it being a family business, it made it even better just being involved with everybody and with people who you love, which is great. So, yeah. That sort of helps.
Excellent. Well, as you say, the family business effect has been serving the local communities and visitors for over 35 years, nestled in a quirky miniature shop, the Main Street. It offers sweets and ice creams and, of course, the delicious fudge. Lauren, questions from yourself. I can see that you're saying, why have we got any samples here? I'm sorry, I didn't bring any
salted caramel. Yeah, or, exactly. Too hot.
Well, Lauren, did you not get samples on the day?
Lauren wasn't with us. This is her first ever show. Oh, no, yeah.
She did.
I apologise. I'm in your direction.
We'll get something through it. Anyway, Lauren, questions for Charlotte.
Oh, you know what? I'd like to know what your customers really like value out of your experience. Because I'm thinking, you know, it's a really family-orientated, authentic service you're providing, and fudge is so warm and it's comforting, and I can really
it's what we need for world peace, let's be honest. You know, if you could actually get Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un to actually get together and actually have a fudge tasting day,
then fudge off.
A fudge off, I like it. Marvelous, exactly. Anyway, sorry, Charlotte, your thoughts and responses.
I totally missed that question.
It's okay. In case you're wondering, we're not simply actually tapping for the sake of tapping. There are various sort of operatives working outside the studio who are trying to obviously build their own sort of construction set here. It's okay. Yeah, we can work with that. It's good. Oh, they've quieted down. Maybe they've heard.
Maybe.
Would you like to just rephrase the question, Lauren?
So, what would you describe as your unique selling point?
Understand that there's so much fudge out there, which is fine, and I accept that. But I think that we can, as I say, only make our own unique selling point by it being a family business, with it being on Holy Island. We've done it for years, and it's all a bit of fun. And I think when it comes down to business and what people call work, I think it's all about just enjoying it. And as I said, fudge is out there and it's readily available, but it's also nice when you get it from somewhere from where people really enjoy what they're doing. And I think that's what I can say my unique selling point is.
And I have to say, Charlotte, that's one of the reasons we invited you to join us on the programme. And when we interviewed you at Burley, we were very impressed with the energy, the enthusiasm and the drive that's actually there. Because there's certain sort of confectionery manufacturers who think, why are you in the business? If you don't like it, just don't do it or move to something completely different. What was your experience of Burley? I mean, you've been there sort of a couple of times. So did you get a chance to actually see any of the eventing and the fact that it was one of our very own souls that we were actually following through who finished a creditable third? In Burley in terms of her assessment. So what were your thoughts on Burley now that we've had a few days to sort of put it all into perspective?
Well, I didn't get too much time to be able to really see any of the shows or anything like that. I did manage to squeeze in some coffee breaks and shopping, which was out of hours. But apart from that, it was very much... at the stall and meeting everybody, which is what I love. I love meeting new people. And yeah, that's why you do stuff like Burley. Keeps things different.
So given the choice then, and this might be an impossible question to answer, but given the choice between being with the family store on Holy Island or indeed establishing a base in Burley, which one would you go for?
Family. All the way.
Marvellous.
But that's where the business comes from, established from, and I think that you have to definitely just stick to where you originated from, and then grow from there. But I chose to come back to the family.
And every so often make a kind of missionary trip to actually sort out various other bits and pieces as well. It's all there. 400 years, I see, the actual store has been a shop from that point of view. So, that's before America declared independence, of course, even before 1776. You know, so there's a whole different world there. And what advice would you give to somebody who might be listening to this and they're thinking, Holy Island, Lindisfarne, Holy Island, I don't know, whatever it's actually referred to, why should they actually make their way to Pilgrim's Fudge? And in particular, why should they make their way to Holy Island? Because we are thinking about having a little location report to see you guys up there. So,
well, it's been voted one of the best coastlines in the UK, and I couldn't agree more. Holy Island itself is absolutely stunning, and there are little businesses nestled within the streets as well, which is not just fudge. And you can also walk around the sandy beaches, which overlook just the ocean and castles. And it's just breathtaking, which is why I actually would reconfirm staying on Holy Island or around this area over being based somewhere else because of that.
Mm-hmm. Lauren, as somebody, I mean, I mentioned Colchester earlier, I mean, yes. Essex and so on. So how far north have you actually been? Because Ben, bless him, hadn't even been to Yorkshire before he actually joined the Madrid Drive. He hadn't even crossed the boundary to actually get, I mean, I know he's from Brighton, so it's even further south than Colchester. But I just thought, now he's over in Crewe, so he's in the northwest, but he hasn't gone. What about yourself? How far north in the country have you been?
I've been to York. That was lovely. It's lovely.
Well, you're kind of halfway. If you get to York, you're halfway to Holy Island, really. You've got another sort of couple of 100 miles. Well, maybe 180 miles or so. from York to Holy Island, probably about 120 or so mile thereabouts and so on. I mean, Ian Lennox, he was connecting with us from Tyneside. He seemed to think it was, the Outer Hebrides from his description of the whole thing. No. You've overshot if you go to the Outer Hebrides. Far too... you did like the lights. So, would you consider making that journey to Holy Island, Lindisfarne, if only for the fudge?
I think I would, But my heart's set on some fudge right now.
There'll be a box waiting for you, Lauren.
Thank you.
You see, the message is that...
If you make it all the way up here.
We're going to have it on our list of things to do over the next few months whilst Lauren is still with us, and I'm sure Tessa, who's poorly actually at present, her voice has gone. Yeah, our voice has gone, so she's on Honey and Lemon, and it's all sorts of things there. So, you know, she probably won't be listening to this. She'll probably be unconscious. It's all right, Tessa. Hopefully she'll connect with us, and we will make that journey. A reminder, the best place to actually go to, if you want to find out more about Pilgrim's Fudge, pilgrimsfudge.co.uk. Do you offer mail order systems as well, Charlotte?
Oh, we do, actually. We do. Yeah, just over the past 3 months, we got a new website, so we put it up, and we haven't actually done mail order before then. So, yes, get yourself on our website, and we'll...
Splendid, exactly. You've got a whole range of things. And I see now, your basket is currently empty. It's great stuff to actually work through. Charlotte, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you?
It most certainly has been reasonably interesting.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. I'm very impressed, actually, with the crack team that Charlotte has working with her, of course, because when we called up yesterday, said we just needed a contact number for Charlotte. Literally, she sent it to me by email within 20 seconds. You know, it's amazing. It's exactly.
We're on it. We're on it.
Yeah, very much so. It's like it's extraordinary. It was like the SAS mixed with the A-team. It's phenomenal in fudge format. So the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again? Will you be kind enough to rejoin us telephonically in the next couple of weeks or so? Will you become our regular Lindisfarne Pilgrim's Fudge correspondent, Charlotte?
Oh, my goodness me, that's a large ask. But it sounds like a good lot of fun. Yes.
Yeah, it's nice because we've shared. I mean, it's your debut in terms of telephonic correspondent from Holy Isle Lindisfarne Fudge, and it's Lauren's first show as well. So you know, moving on.
Sounds great.
Yeah. And actually, do you have any particular musical taste or musicians or artists that you Mr. Comedian might have? I didn't actually ask you about this, but is there any sort of choice of music that you particularly sort of think, yeah, I'd like to go for that? Please don't ask for Lindisfarne or Holy Island, because sadly, I haven't put it into the system as yet, and I know it's a cliche, but other than that, what would you like?
I'd love Escape Pina Colada.
Oh, I see what you did there. The classic song, as indeed revitalised for Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, we have had that in the past. I suspect we might have to hold it off for your return system, because it's gradually working through that. Your Sweet Escape is coming through. I'm sorry, it's not what we wanted. No. You know, that's Alesso featuring Serena. Sometimes I feel that the computers have indeed taken over the world, etc. We've got a Himalayan Escape. That's not going to help, in any way, shape or form. But proving that when you've actually got Pilgrim's Fudge on the case, and you really say, look, this is Charlotte Mundy's first piece. At least you can actually do is get a sort of a piece of music that she actually wants. Charlotte, this is for you.
I was tired of my lady. We'd been together too long. Like a worn-out recording of a favorite song. So while she lay there sleeping, I read the paper in bed. And in the personal columns, there was this letter I read. If you like piña colada, my lady, I know that sounds kind of mean, but me and my old lady have fallen into the same old routine. So I wrote to the paper, took out a personal ad, and though I'm nobody's poet, I thought it wasn't half bad. Yes, I like piña colada. Caught in the rain, I'm not much into
cut through all this red tape. At a bar called O'Malley's, where we'll plan our escape.
There you go, dedicated as requested to our fudge makers in Holy Island, the Pina Colada song, Rupert Holmes. Very summary. It is National Poetry Day, as we've been celebrating, and we're delighted now to be able to welcome the awesomely talented James Messiah to the programme. James, good morning, how are you?
Good morning, not too bad, thanks.
Very good indeed. Now, gentrification, gang culture, all manner of bits and pieces, and yet we need to be set free. We need to have freedom. We need that sort of freedom from that perspective.
Yeah.
When you first became involved with National Poetry Day, what were your thoughts? Did you say, well, you know, it's all good, but, you know, where are we going to go in terms of carving out those words which will mean things to people?
Well, I think that for this piece that I wrote with GIFGAF, it occurred to me that people may be being introduced to my work for the first time. And so the opening line is, you may not know me, but you may be able to guess what I want to be. And it was trying to tap into sort of universal, base, human, foundational instinct or desire. And I imagine that one thing that could go across the spectrum of the human race would be the desire to be free. And so we have our poem.
Absolutely. Now, again, in the studio, we actually have Lauren, who's one of our ACE Level 3 public relations students from that point of view. Lauren, we talked about poetry and various other factors. Clearly, we were looking at some of the facts that GIFGAF have actually found here. 77% of British people admit to feeling trapped by life circumstances. 62% feel that their financial situation was the main reason for feeling trapped, followed by their job and their boss and their health, and that young people like yourself are likely to be more stressed, etc. And yet you said, no, actually, I'm okay.
Yeah, like, I feel quite against this. Mm. You know, I think it's a matter of your consciousness and your...
Which is a really, it is sort of consciousness, because if you're talking about freedom, I mean, you know, student loan debt, millennial sort of challenges on that sort of basis, is it ultimately, it's a case of, it's a mind thing, James, that just as good poetry starts with the soul and the mind, you know, when we're kind of getting to this, ultimately we're looking at, that's what you need to actually just switch into a positive way of thought.
Certainly, in many instances, I think it could be said that an individual could elevate their state of being by viewing things more positively. However, the trouble is not everyone has the same advantages in life. And I think that certainly in my case, how I managed to change my own perspective was through writing. And some of the issues that I was facing that I described in other poems that I'd written, I was able to escape by way of writing and changing my state of mind. Whereas there are other friends of mine who perhaps haven't got quite the same opportunities. And so, yeah, they would feel trapped because they're not aware of the opportunities that are out there for them to elevate and exist.
Which clearly demonstrates that you do empathise clearly with other young folk who actually feel the same sort of way, they feel trapped and so on from that perspective. Is debt-free the number one thing that we actually wish was the case, that actually being free from debt, that's the ultimate sort of thing? Surely I would have thought good health is even more important.
Well, yeah, I suppose in many ways people say that good health comes first. But I can say that in my own experience, having been to university and studied there, one of the main things that was really daunting for me was the idea of being in debt. And so I guess people do take their good health for granted. And once you've kind of gone past that notion of having, you know, a good heart and a strong back, you definitely want to be debt-free. And so I can understand why a lot of young people would think that is the main thing that's keeping them feeling trapped.
Share with us a little more about the actual poem that you wrote. I mean, we took a few sort of lines from the whole thing, but just talk us through the sort of process in which something new has kind of, you know, I mean, in years to come, people will actually sort of have this in the same way as A Field of Golden Daffodils, I'm sure, and Wordsworth and Keats and so on. But from your own perspective, something new, how did it actually evolve?
Well, yeah, I suppose, as I said earlier, it was about introducing myself as a writer to people who maybe see my work for the first time in this forum. I guess typically I'd be performing to London audiences, and so the issues and topics I deal with are kind of London-centric. Whereas for this piece, it was definitely the idea of it being nationwide, and I wanted to kind of have something that would be universally applicable. And so the poem itself kind of uses nature as a theme, as a thing that runs throughout it, and also just basic humanity. And those are things that you'll see throughout the idea of wanting to fly away. Like, I imagine that a lot of people in their human state feel limited in traffic when they can't fly above the cars and taxis and buses that are blocking their route. And so I mentioned wanting to fly and wanting to be free. And so that was what kind of inspired the main line of this piece. Mm.
Well, poetry seems to have become the new rock and roll. I mean, clearly we have on Siren FM the whole notions of the word perfect, the team that actually do their item every Wednesday between 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. Is this something? I mean, do you feel much like rock music was a way of escape in many ways? Do you think that poetry is more and more becoming more of an opportunity for guys to really express themselves, male, female, whatever gender, race, or whatever?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I can certainly say that for myself, when I was getting my start as a writer and performer, it was the open mics that existed in my area that got me out. And it was a chance to meet new people and to hear what their thoughts and feelings were on different issues and topics. That really did help me. And I suppose, as there are a lot of things happening in the world, I mean, there always have been, but maybe because of social media, we're perhaps more aware of them, it does help to have an outlet for your thoughts and feelings. And so I guess more people are tweeting, more people are texting, more people are making phone calls to say what's on their minds. And another medium through which to express yourself is through poetry.
Lauren, as somebody who's well into social media, texting, yeah, tweeting it and so on, I'm sure we'll be putting a tweet with hashtag the awesome James Messiah from that point of view in a few seconds. Yeah. But thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, that really resonates with me. I think social media technology, it's all very quick and you're not very conscious of what you're writing. But with something like poetry, you're conscious of how you feel and it's a much more creative experience and you're really delving into
the human condition.
Yes.
Looking at your own experiences, grime music, gentrification. Sounds like a band, actually. Grime music and gentrification. Let's make that together. It's like a double act. Is it a case of, like all good poets, James, you actually get your inspiration from really the crazy thing we call life?
Certainly so. I guess in this particular instance, I mean, as I said before, I have written other poems about freedom from the kind of things that I felt were trapping me before. So you talk about the kind of gang violence, gentrification, these are things that were kind of prevalent in my own experience growing up, and poetry was a means for which to escape that. But thankfully, I guess, with the help of GIFGAF and performing, you know, commissioning this piece, I was able to explore a maybe broader notion of what life was about outside of my own kind of immediate circumstances in London.
It's National Poetry Day, as we've said. We've talked about influences, we've talked about a theme of freedom, we've worked through that process. Where can people actually go to, James, to find out further details about this GIFGAF survey and basically being free?
So, via the GIFGAF website, you can see more of the details on the statistics. And on the GIFGAF YouTube channel, you can see the poem that I wrote for them and performed.
James, it's been, as I said at the start, awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self. I'm pleased to see that your apprenticeship with those other folk, Nick Grimshaw and Chris Evans, who I think have breakfast shows on different stations, has actually proven excellent. I mean, you've passed it with flying colours, and I feel you are first-class honours graduate when it comes to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. But have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us? Has it been okay for you, James Messiah?
I have indeed. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
So can we hopefully look forward to connecting with you again in the not-too-distant future and keeping us appraised of your awesome poetry and more as time proceeds? Will you be kind enough to return?
Certainly so. Have a good day.
Yay!
Yeah.
impressions of the Midweek Drive has been the importance of science, and science for all in so many ways, and accordingly we're quite shocked to find that new research has revealed that primary school teachers spend less than 1.5 hours a week on science subjects. That's 90 minutes on science. Now, you can obviously pack in a lot into 90 minutes, but even allowing for, let's say, 4,800 seconds worth of stuff, it's not a great deal of time. And to address the importance of science in primary schools, we're delighted to welcome BBC presenter extraordinaire and ace science expert, the fabulous Maddie Moat. How are you, Maddie?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, this particular thing, I mean, we know that school teachers are right across the base face various challenges and so on. But 90 minutes isn't that big. It doesn't begin to kind of be sufficient, really.
I know. I was so surprised by the study, less than an hour and a half a week. I just thought, really? I think it turns out just there is a huge lean towards maths and English, especially in primary schools. And I do think that primary teachers really feel the burden of that. They have a responsibility to make sure that literacy and numeracy take centre stage. But that does mean that science just isn't being prioritised. And when you look at the numbers in this study, it's really important that we find solutions or help primary teachers to bring science teaching into their lessons in a way that is simple and easy, that isn't going to interrupt the flow of their children's learning and is actually supporting other subjects as well.
We were speaking earlier about the dearth of women in technology subjects, and really it starts at the young age, where in essence you don't want to get that gender bias introduced where, you know, the fun of science can really be revealed.
Well, I have the pleasure of working with lots of children and teaching science to youngsters, and it's very clear to me that we are all born natural scientists. Children are curious in nature. They love to observe things. They love to notice things. They like to ask why, and they want to know how things work or how things are made. And that is what a scientist is. A scientist is someone who asks questions about the world around them. And we want to make sure that we capture that passion and that natural curiosity. And if children can associate that with science, and then that passion will continue later on in life and when they move on to secondary school as well.
What inspired yourself, Maddie, to actually enter the science and technology fields?
Well, so I'd always loved science when I was young, but I also enjoyed theatre, enjoyed the arts. And at school, I was forced really to make a decision between going on with science subjects or theatre and drama. And I chose to pursue theatre and drama. But it wasn't until I'd been doing that for a few years that I actually realised I really missed science. I missed learning. I missed being curious. So actually, I was able to merge the two together, and I created a YouTube channel, and I started presenting science, not as an expert, but as someone who is passionate, someone who enjoys talking to experts and helping translate that to the wider community. Which is why it's so brilliant to be working on this particular project with Explorify, because all this is about is just encouraging young children to be curious in the classroom and finding simple ways to do that that aren't intimidating to teachers.
And you've effortlessly segued to that partnership between the Wellcome Trust and the BBC, the Institute of Engineering and Technology and the Institute of Physics, this notion of Explorify.
Yes.
This should hopefully sort of help, you know, teachers and children from that point of view.
I'm so excited about it, because I think one of the reasons science isn't being looked at as much in primary schools is that for teachers there's this misconception that it is time consuming, that there might be a lack of resources, that it's going to be fussy, it's going to be messy to teach, it can be quite overwhelming, when actually, as we've already said, at its essence, science is just about asking questions. And Explorify is a free program. Anyone can sign up to it, and it will give teachers access to really simple activities that might take as little as 5 minutes, that are going to encourage their children to start thinking like scientists and discussing things they see in the world around them. And it's just these little snippets of science, if we can bring those into the classroom here and there every day, hopefully that statistic of an hour and a half will slowly but surely move upwards a little bit.
Now, speaking as somebody whose first degree was chemistry and biology and always followed the life sciences, although if I was really pushed, I'd always say probably my interests were in the cosmological areas, the astronomy, the sort of areas from that sort of side of things. Were you more of a life sciences person, a physical sciences person, or was it just everything for yourself?
For me, it was very much life sciences as well. I had always loved animals and natural history, so I always leaned towards a preference for biology. But now I like to cover absolutely everything. In fact, I really enjoy looking at engineering and talking about engineering specifically to young people, because I think finding out how things are made and how things work is something that's particularly fascinating. I find that's a question that children ask a lot.
Clearly, exobiology and exoengineering for extraterrestrial work is something which we could look into as well. But that's
yes,
that's maybe for the latter part of the 21st century as we move through that. Who's a time travel machine from that perspective, get back to Einstein's world. Where can people actually go to, Maddie, to find out more about Explorify and find out these resources?
So absolutely anyone, teachers or even the likes of myself, I found the website really interesting and useful. If you go to explorify.welcome, that's welcome with two L's, .ac.uk, and you can find the programme there, get stuck into those activities, and I think they're a really, really great addition to any classroom.
Maddie, it's been a delight, which we knew it would be, connecting with your good self this morning. So we've got two final questions for you. They're our kind of customer research ones. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I've had a wonderful telephonic link. I found it very lovely.
Marvellous. So the next critical question is, can we prevail upon your good self to maybe join us again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of the excitement of science as it proceeds through the world today?
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to talk about, encouraging passion for science.
Science. Tell me about it.
Thank you, Thomas. Thomas Dolby, She Blinded Me With Science. Well, we thank Gabriella Peralta for her launching of the show, with Gibraltar, of course, in the background. Thanks to Richard Fitzwilliams. Harsh thoughts about Kingsman.
Yeah, very harsh.
Ian Lennox, of course, who was clearly sorting out all manner of wonderful things there. And from Scope and from Virgin Media, James Taylor, Mark Atkinson, and Jeff Dodds, of course. Charlotte Mundy from Pilgrim's Fudge Kitchen and Holy Island. The amazingly productive and prolific poet extraordinaire James Messiah. National Poetry Day. Recently, Matty Moat, of course, TV presenter and blogger extraordinaire. But we haven't finished quite yet. I haven't even thanked John Wenham, who kind of came in delivering the key, returning the key to the office, taking the key to the office. That's marvellous. John does that kind of thing. When he's not actually involved with writing the schedule and at least for taking the event star and putting things together, he'll just, it's like a seamless machine that keeps Siren ticking over, much like Ryan Jones does. Anyway, have you enjoyed your first official Midweek Drive Morning Edition, Lauren Wood?
I have very much. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Well, indeed, photographs of Lauren are now indeed online.
So it's official.
Circuit, exactly. So it's sort of through from that basis, which is all good. And let's talk briefly about Oxfam. Again, Alison Moore will be coming in to talk a bit more about that. So share with us 75th anniversary. Lots of exciting things going to be happening within that. Best to follow it on social media, would you say?
Yeah, like our...
Yes, like the Oxfam website, etc. Chloe, yes. Overwhelmed with the emotion of it all.
Like us, love us, support us. Mm-hmm. And we're reflecting on what Oxfam has achieved. So if you want to get involved, then you can go on our Facebook.
Which is pretty significant. And Alison Moore, aforementioned person from Oxfam. Get well soon, Alison.
Yes.
All being well, she'll be with us for Wednesday's Midweek Drive, which can be a packed programme because I think Tessa Snart will be back for it with us then. Hannah Brown will be joining us. And Molly Richardson, I think, is coming along for the Wednesday slot. So.
Yay, good to have her
yeah.
back.
Yeah, but will you return, Lauren? Will you be back with us?
I think I will return.
Fancy coming back next Thursday?
Why not? I've
there,
myself.
You see, this is it. It's full. Ben Lewis can rest easy. You know, he's thinking, and I know it's like a sword from the stone, really. You've seized that sword, you've withdrawn it from the stone, and it's all good. Excellent stuff. Okay, great stuff coming up as far as Siren is concerned. We forgot to mention, of course, so we're mentioning it now, that Lincoln Lights is actually on. That's Lincoln Get Hold of Technology and Science. We're running a special series of previews this evening between 7 and 10, 7 and 8, I should say, interviews with many of the contributors. And then all wonderful things are happening throughout the University of Lincoln tomorrow. Go to the Lincoln Lights website, lightsexpo.org, find out more about that. It's going to be a fantastic day. It's also the end of the closing parts of the Lincoln Book Festival. So there are heaps of good stuff happening. Check those out. Stay tuned to Siren Radio to find out even more wonderful things. Take us up to the news. I'm not sure how Lauren's going to respond to this at all, actually, because it's a kind of combination of Kylie Minogue and Beyonce.
Oh.
Yeah. Kylie Minogue, Never Too Late. Well, it isn't really. She's singing it now. She's only got about a minute or so to go. And then Beyonce. That's it. We're out of here. Have a great Thursday, September 28th, 2017. The Midweek Drive Morning Edition back in October 2017, next week. Happy trails. Would you like to say farewell, Lauren?
Farewell. Thank you for having me.